Well, greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, this is ATCS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going on longer than 42 years. Every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, come on here. Most of those years were done under the guidance of Dick, K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent key over 2 years ago, but in his memory, we continue it on in order as an opportunity to learn from each other, teach each other, entertain each other, abuse each other, what have you. If you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong, and you probably should look someplace else. But I hope everyone has returned back here, and I hope we have some new people. We should have an interesting time tonight. Let me drop for a second, and I will offer you the usual link. Okay, in order to reach me and do it by radio, that email is as good as anything. That would be either for so-called mailbag questions. If you're available near a radio Sunday night and you still want to ask a question, you can listen to the answer in real time on a internet audio stream or an Echolink node, or you can pick it up as an archived audio file later on in the week. Or if you have a topic for discussion. Now, this could be a topic that you would like to do a presentation on. It could be a topic that you would like to be part of a discussion about. And it could be just one of those things that you'd like to hear other people talk about it because you don't feel too comfortable yet discussing that particular topic, but you're interested in learning about it. Or if you have a puzzle. Now, I'm always looking for puzzles or riddles or what have you. I have a few in my back pocket for tonight, which I hope I have the opportunity to share with everyone. It depends upon how much free time we have. It depends upon the disposition of the crowd. If they're interested in listening but not talking, puzzles don't really work too well. But we'll see. So if you have any of those, or if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder, WS2N, have him take a look at a NASA or space-related story and comment. My email address is mailbag@ac2s.com. Of course, if you want to go directly to Paul, you can reach him at spacenetreport@gmail.com. I have a link page full of interesting YouTube and articles and all kinds of fun stuff that I've picked up in the past week that I'd like to share with people. It also has a picture that Paul's going to mention during his SpaceNet report. You can reach my link page. It's available 24/7. You can reach it at any time by typing into your browser, roy.ac2test.com. We have a chat room. Sometimes it's very, very quiet. Last few weeks it's been quiet, but sometimes it's been raucous. You can get there by typing into your browser, chat.ac2test.com. Let's drop for a sec. Okay. I offered an audio stream on the internet to the technical of the technical net every Sunday night, and because a few people asked me to keep it up for the rest of the week, it's available almost 24/7. I'm going to be doing, I keep on mentioning it, and I never get around to it, but I'm going to be doing some fix-up work and maintenance work on the computer, so it might be down for a few hours, but most of the time it's up. It by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. Again, technet.ac2gs.com will give you an audio stream of the Glen Oaks repeater throughout the day. I would say the night, but the night isn't active. They turn the repeater off. Also, want to remind people, my KC2NJI has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. Has archives of our technical net going as far back as September of 2006. So when you have a chance, check it out. Listen to a few old tech nets, some of the best and the brightest talking at those times. Big, of course, K2RIW, Eric, Mel, a lot of very, very smart guys who unfortunately became silent keys over the years. Avail yourself of their wisdom. It is still highly, highly valuable. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be right back. Okay, so as I mentioned before, I have a few puzzles, little mini puzzles. in my back pocket for tonight. I hope we get to use them, but we'll do that later on. Right now, I would like to ask the audience if they have any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight. I would tend to prefer that the first few be amateur radio related. As everyone who has been here before knows, I am perfectly willing to discuss any other form of science and technology as the night progresses. So with that in mind, if anyone out there would like to put their name on the list, and if there are time constraints, some of our people check in second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, but they're rushed. Please let me know, and we'll juggle the list a little bit to hopefully make allowances for that. So with all that in mind, anyone out there with any questions, comments, or topics for discussion tonight, hit that push the talk button, give us your first name, and your call sign.
W2BC, non-AM.
Okay, Rich and Wesley recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, well, since we only have two entries, we'll just do it in order. I'm sure Wesley's more than willing to wait after we finish with Rich's question or comment. And again, out there, if you're so inclined, if you come up with a question or a topic for discussion, later on, we'll probably be accepting further requests. So keep that in mind. You know, think a little bit. Maybe you'll have some problem that you would like to kind of address on the net and get other people's opinion. Anyway, let us start off tonight with Rich, W2BZ. What is your question, comment, or statement for tonight, Rich?
Good evening, Dr. Roy, and good evening, everybody. My first topic, I actually have three. My first topic is 5G versus 4G. Is there enough of an advantage, and what are they, to upgrade your phone, or if it's just, you know, a 10, 20% speed advantage, maybe it's not enough to upgrade your phone. So I wondered if you had any ideas about that, Roy.
Okay, well, we can discuss 5G versus 4G. Unfortunately, it's not really a strict binary. What very often happens is companies will roll out initial 5G cell towers that do not have the complete capability of 5G technology, and as time goes on, will change the design of the cell towers and build more cell towers. We had an article from the New York Times a few weeks ago in the link page that demonstrated that 5G cell tower repeaters were popping up on the sidewalk. Much to the annoyance of passers-by, they're not really terribly aesthetically pleasing. But so it's a gradual process rather than they flip a switch and you go completely from 4G to 5G. Let me drop for a second. The problem with answering the question is that there are a lot of aspects of 5G that go somewhat beyond the standard performance of a cell phone. The additional features of 5G will probably be incredibly unimpressive to you and anyone else, for the most part, carrying a cell phone. One of the big things is they are broadening the frequency range, whereas 4G kind of is at the very low end of the microwave bandwidth. 5G can go as high as 300 gigahertz. So it has a wide swath of frequency ranges. The reason for that is they want to increase the amount of data transmission. So whereas you could get maybe a little bit less than a gigabit per second on a 4G, you could theoretically get 100 times that with 5G. Of course, initially, you're not going to get anything close to 10 times the bandwidth because the initial 5G cell towers won't have quite, the band range that the protocol allows. But it does allow for massive amounts of data transmission back and forth. Let me drop for a second. Another issue that I'm sure you're not going to really care much about is latency issues. Latency is a lag from when you're transmitting to when you get a response. This is very important to people who play video games, because if you're shooting something and when you hit the trigger, you have to wait a tenth or a fifth of a second to have something happen, it can be very distracting. As long as you keep it below about 100 or 200 milliseconds, it's not that perceptible. There's a built-in latency in our brain, and there's corrective circuits that make it not obvious that that latency exists. So I think the latency standard for 4G is approximately 100 milliseconds. We wouldn't probably notice. 5G allows for latencies as short as 1 millisecond. So again, for data transfer, for feedback mechanisms, very useful. For you on a cell phone, I don't think it will impact you at all. Let's see, there's another thing that it brings. I'll drop and I'll come right back because I don't want to time out anything. Okay. Another interesting aspect of 5G as opposed to 4G is that you can segment bandwidth. You can do all kinds of segmenting at the level of the cell tower and the central building and all kinds of things. So it's not one type of 5G. You could optimize a small portion of 5G at the lower frequency range for low power Internet of Things type of protocols, so that it's inexpensive and it allows for low power transmitters to transmit to the cell tower, whereas other segments can be optimized for high bandwidth that require higher power and use higher frequencies. So you can segment your large band spectrum for different utilizations. You can build harder military-grade encryption into some and medium-grade into others. There's a lot more flexibility allowed with 5G architecture than you'll see with 4. Again, will it impress you with your cell phone? I don't think so. So a lot of these modifications are more designed for industrial, military, and future-proofing. Telephone companies would really love to be your internet service provider and do away with the cable companies and anyone else. You just plug your SIM into your router and you're getting multi-gigabits per second of transmission up time and downtime. That, I think, is their wet dream. Anyway, that's it in a nutshell. If you have any questions about what I've said, please feel free.
So it seems like what you're saying is the major advantages speed-wise have more to do with, like, corporate and military accounts, you know, like maybe there'd be a speed bump for an Amazon or, you know, some mega sites like that, rather than a site like mine, which is, you know, a fairly low traffic site. I'm also wondering what benefits the carriers have. Do they benefit? Is their network build-out easier or more cost efficient, do you think? Because so far what you say is not something that I would want, you know, right away and say, oh, I got to get a 5G phone because this or that will be so much better.
C2GS. like I said, for most people, if they just have a phone, moving from 4G to 5G, other than kind of protecting yourself from them, at this point, 4G will be an active protocol available on all the cell towers. But, you know, probably like 3G before it, eventually there'll be a time when, for one reason or another, the telephone companies decide it's cost-effective to get rid of the 4G and have you rely on the 5G. Other than that, I don't see any kind of significant benefit for the cell phone user. But that's not what the telcos are really thinking of, I think. I think they're really thinking of taking every last dollar away from the cable companies that are also operating as ISPs and any other ISP on the block. You offer a young person almost unlimited bandwidth where they can watch, for some odd reason, I don't know why you'd want to, but if you want to watch an eight megabit technology video, you know, I'm still at 1080, but 4K is all over the place. But eventually, there'll be people who want to pay for 8K transmission. Gamers, we have a few gamers out there. They're always looking for very, very short latency periods that gives them, they feel, an edge on their gaming experience. So that's a draw. So a lot of these features sound to me to be a lot. I mean, there are other industrial things that you could do that I'm less familiar with, but I think the primary focus that I can recognize rather easily is they want to be your ISP, want to be right there feeding you every little bit. And then at a time, they were planning to be a streaming service on top of that so that they would get your money as a streamer. AT kind of decided that that was a loss of money. So I think they've changed their mind. But at the very least, they want to be your ISP and your only ISP. Wireless, wired, home, mobile, no matter what, you'll be paying them.
Yeah, and then watch the prices go up and up and up. All right, that about answers it. Very well. My second question is more on the medical side. Now that it's getting very dry outside, people are pulling out their humidifiers, and I'm wondering how dangerous or not you think using regular tap water in your humidifier is, as opposed to boy, I went blank on the name of the water you could buy in drugstores. But because that white dust does accumulate, and, you know, I have a vision in my head about that white dust accumulating on my lungs. So do you think it's okay to use regular tap water with humidifiers?
Okay, I think you're thinking of distilled water, which gets expensive. I mean, a bottle of, you know, a gallon jug of distilled water, which I usually have someplace in the house for other purposes, is, you know, a bunker cell. But you could go through a gallon jug in a day or two, depending upon the size and the ability of your humidifier. So the big question is, what do you do about that? Also, keep in mind that there are different types of humidifiers with different circumstances. The worst-case scenario where you get a lot of the mineral deposits that you want to have in your tap water. It's not healthy to drink distilled water. It will leach minerals out of your body, possibly, depending upon your diet. So, you know, mineral content water is best to be drunk. But the point is, there's different technologies. Ultrasonic humidifiers emit an ultrasonic sound, breaking up the surface tension and produce a kind of a fog effect that raises the water vapor out of your humidifier with a little fan, and that's that way of humidification. Others use a heating coil. So they boil up the water. In those cases, there is less residual that's being put into the air. It tends to boil out and leave the sediment mostly behind, which leads with a problem of cleanup. And there are other methods. There are capillary action, where you have a material that soaks up water, you know, like a blanket. And you put it in a pool of water, its capillary action wets the cloth, and a fan blows through the cloth, and the water vapor comes off of it. So ultrasonic methods are the worst for the white ass. It gives you the most because this is just disrupting the surface tension. Anything on the surface, including the dissolved minerals, will go with you, and you will develop a very, very fine dust. Again, there are ways around that. There are usually filters. I have an ultrasonic heated humidifier that includes a cartridge that I change every 6 weeks or so that basically bonds with the calcium and the other minerals so that the white powder is much less evident. And especially if you change it regularly, that should not be...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Okay, so I timed out someplace somewhere. I just say that the particular humidifier that I tend to use is out of production. It's an ultrasonic heated, so it's a combination of two, and it uses a filtration system that binds with the salts in the water, the minerals, so that I don't really have much of a problem with white powder unless I get lazy and I don't exchange it for a new fresh batch.
All right, so I'm hearing you saying that not too dangerous for your lungs, your breathing, not too dangerous. It's more that it's a little bit of messy than anything else. Is that correct?
Yeah, it depends where you want the sludge. It's best to have it in the filter. Second best is a humidifier that you have to scrub clean. Third is to kind of coat your furniture and such. It adds a little bit to the maintenance and dusting time. But for the most part, they're usually calcium salts. They're not like things like asbestos fibers and other spiky crystals and such. So I wouldn't imagine, although I haven't read a great deal of work on the possible exposure of humidifier deposits, but I would think that it's more of a dusting problem than it would be a respiratory problem.
All right. You answered that one. You know what would be a good feature add-on upgrade for a repeater would be if you like, say, 5 seconds away from timing out, to give you, like, warning beats, you know, 5 beats and 4 beats and 3 beats or whatever, so you don't have to guess at it, because I can imagine with you answering questions and getting into depth in the answer, it's very hard to guess when the thing's going to time out or not. I know it's, you know, it wouldn't be that hard a feature to add on to repeaters instead of having to guess. There'd be a lot less timeouts that way, especially in, you know, in forums like this one. Okay, the last question is, I know that you are a Elon Musk follower. Not in the sense of a devotee, but the opposite of Elon Musk. And I was thinking when I heard today that Meta laid off 13 30,000 people today or yesterday, which is a lot more than what Elon laid off in terms of percentage of workforce. But they're not going to get, I don't think, the press coverage that Elon does. So my question is, what's the latest and greatest with Elon? What do you think is going to be happening in the near future?
By the way, AP2GS, let me take out my crystal ball here. Let's polish it a little bit. By the way, what you suggested would not work unless you were the type of guy who could listen to their own signal. Then you wouldn't need it, because when you timed out, you'd hear your own signal timing out. The problem is that while I'm transmitting, I can't receive. My antennas are too close, so they de-sense the other radios. If you have the ability to space your antennas wide enough so that they're not de-sensing your other radios, you then have what I mentioned earlier, the latency issue. There is a delay from where you're talking to where it goes into the repeater, and the repeater repeats it back to a nearby radio that you're listening to. So listening to a delayed version of what you're saying can disturb your conversation immensely. It's something that people have to kind of teach themselves. Dick used analog equipment, and the latency wasn't wide enough to bother him after kind of working on it a little bit. He used to listen to his signals. When he timed out, he knew it. So I don't have the ability to do that, and if I did, I don't know what the latency would be, because the farther away you are from the repeater, the more degree of latency. So there's that problem. Let me drop for a second. Okay, getting back to, I couldn't quite make out where the 13,000 people were being fired. I would assume it was Amazon. I don't think that's anywhere near 50% that Musk fired. He fired basically 50% of all of his employees, in some ways detrimental to the company in enormous ways. Supposedly, the guys in charge of security were kind of confused at the end of the firing, and entire departments were emptied, and it was a mess. And there's a lot of compliance issues that Twitter agreed to legally that requires departments to be housed, and he shut them down as part of the firing. Let me drop for a sec. In addition, unfortunately, I'm sure everyone noticed he gave told every one of his 50% employees remaining, 48% by the time some of them just said, screw you, and left, that if they weren't willing to work 80-hour days, and just like insane people, they could quit as well. And if he didn't get their guarantee that they were going to work twice as hard by the end of the day, they were fired too. So if you take him at his word, which I would never do, that would mean that instead of 50% of people, he fired about 87% of his people. You can't run any kind of a real company with 87% of your employees gone. So he then tried to kind of get them to come back, some of them. But it's a mess. I don't know what to tell you. It's a mess. Amazon, I think, is much, 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 much bigger. I think Jeff Bezos is vain. He's just kind of tightening things up. And he's anti-union. They're all anti-union. But I'm not quite sure. Some people give... let me drop a cent, by the way. Some people still want to say that Elon's a genius. So the only way that they could explain what's going on in Twitter to them is to suggest that maybe Elon has found himself in a difficult situation and he wants to go bankrupt. That he somehow decided that he loses less money if he goes bankrupt than if he drags this out and has to pay yearly installments of a $13 billion loan that he has hanging over his head. Anyway, that's my short take, but I got reams of commentary on good old Elon.
Maybe every once in a while you could do an update, an Elon Musk watch update on the TechNet, since it is a technical company that we're talking about. Alright, yeah, I wasn't even thinking about it. Of course you can't hear yourself while you're transmitting. So then they could put it in, you could have a setting where you can put in minutes and seconds when you want your transceiver to beep. Now, I wonder if a transceiver can beep when you're transmitting. That's up to the engineers to figure out. But anyway, I wonder if there are repeaters that don't time out. Could that be possible? Last question, Roy.
Well, practically, yeah. You can set a repeater for a timeout of zero, and it won't time out. The reason primarily why timeouts are important under the TechNet circumstances is that we have a multi-link system. It is not a very simple system where you simply have one repeater and that's it. We have a repeater, we have a linked repeater, we have IRLP, we have EchoLink, so we have all these separate devices that need time to kind of reset or they go out of sync with each other and they're disabled. So that's the reason why it's more important in this circumstance that we do have timeout.
Okay. Just one quickie, last one. I heard Richie saying on Monday night that the new repeater at Middle Island will be linked to not Sheldon, but to... age does creep up on you quite quickly after a while. the other repeater, forget where it is. Is that, did I hear right?
I think you're alluding to the Plainview repeater. That's our UHF repeater. And I believe I heard that as an ongoing plan a month or so ago. So that would make sense to me.
Okay, now why would Plainview need a link to Middle Island? I don't see what the benefit is there, just getting Plainview to be able to be used for people more out east like I am in Riverhead.
Yeah, it's a means of expanding the footprint of the LIMARP repeater system. It would be counterproductive, probably, to link it to Glen Oaks and Selden, because the footprint really wouldn't change much, whereas they felt that if they link it with Plainview, there's, the case could be made that it would extend coverage more reasonably. So that's my understanding.
Okay. By the way, the company that laid off the 13,000 was Meta, Facebook.
Oh, okay. Well, again, I don't think that's 50% of their employees. I think that's a smaller percent. Meta has had a lot of problems. Nothing happens in a vacuum. Meta has lost billions and billions of dollars on all kinds of development projects that have failed. They spent $1 billion on glorified cryptocurrency. They're spending a lot on virtual reality. And anyone who actually knows anything about virtual reality can easily discern that the quality of what they're working on sinks. Young people who are interested in virtual reality have better options. Older people who couldn't give a damn about virtual reality don't give a damn about virtual reality. So it's something that Zook kind of got into his head, and it ain't leaving. And he's wasting a lot of money. They're losing participation in Facebook is dropping. The value of it is dropping. They got problems. So certainly tightening up the employee list makes sense in that case. Doing a hatchet job on Twitter, you know, if it's such a disaster, why did you spend $44 billion on it? Obviously, something's broken there, and it includes him.
Yeah, it's going to be, with what's happening with cryptocurrency in that world, and what's happening at Twitter, what's happening at Facebook, it's going to be an interesting year coming up. I think there's going to be a lot of corpses lying around the techno world in 2023. Anyway, Roy, thanks for your answers, and I appreciate it, and we'll see you soon. Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Okay, you're welcome, Rich. Yeah, the technical side of the economy is always dubious. It's been driving a lot of the stock market in the last 10, 15 years. You know, we got over the bubble the last time, but with this one bubble, there'll be others. And social networks rely on human beings. Things are not reliable. So what could be the application of today will be the application of tomorrow, next week. So you can always bet on technology. It's lots of fun to play with it. But it has a fresh date that it's counted in the second, some of it. So anyway, any other person with any comments about any of the things that I said the last 30 minutes or so, if you want to put in your two cents or ask a question or make a comment, feel free.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
News, I guess yesterday, it was talking about people with disabilities. Some of those people are not going to be happy. They have the ability to raise money on Twitter. You know, they have different systems. You know, next thing you know, you have a large amount of money that could be going to certain disability groups, or maybe some people, in, you know, actual people. So I heard that could be a problem. And also foreign countries that have problems with dictated type of people, they have a bit of free speech on Twitter, and they could lose that. Just a comment on that. Back to you, Ray.
Yeah, the thing is that all these social networking tools get used not only by people chatting with each other or people want to show off how clever they are, but for all kinds of things. There are businesses where you know, people who work temporary, you know, short bits, get tagged on Twitter very often. It varies. So, you know, the lack of a stable Twitter is going to impact a lot of companies and charitable organizations and what have you. Hopefully, they'll be flexible enough to kind of shift gears and move on to Instagram or Facebook or something else like that. But it's one of the problems with social networks. You use them, and then if they fail you, you know, if occasionally a company will just kind of say, oh, well, we quit, and you know, you're kind of left in a hole. So, yeah, there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of grief behind all these machinations of billionaire oligarchs who are just kind of trying to play five-dimensional chess with each other and themselves sometimes. But yeah, I feel bad for the little people who are using technology to help the world. You know, it's not a stable base, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you wake up a week or two from now and Twitter is gone. I heard that on the news as well.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be gone. I think it's going to be different. I think it's going to be downscaled. It's going to take on maybe a slightly different personality. The problem is it's not cost effective. I mean, it's not like this is an economic net. This is a technical net. But the laws of economics, if there are any laws, are completely broken by a lot of these social networks. With Facebook, there's a massive way of collecting data, selling it, and advertisement. And they've optimized and benefited greatly, and there's a lot of profit made with Meta or Facebook. That has never been the case with Twitter. Twitter has always had a negative income. It's always bleeding money. So unless you're a social network genius who can figure a way of monetizing it, and the way that good old Elon has decided to monetize it stinks. He thinks that half of all Twitter accounts will pay his $8 a month. I think when he announced it, I think he got maybe 8,000 out of what, 100 or 200 million or something. So, no, and his advertisers got frightened away. So, he's in a different area. All of his other business ventures have nothing to do with social networks and such. So, he's one of those guys reading his press releases who thinks he can do everything. Almost no one can do everything. So, you know, he's surprised. Elon is a human being.
Well, you know, he's had some successes. You know, he was with PayPal, and then, of course, the SpaceX, and then he got involved with the automobiles, you know, one thing after the other. After a while, you think that no matter what you bet on, it's going to turn up roast. But I guess not all the time. And Twitter was having their problems anyway, you know. They had those people down in Congress testifying, and I think he bought into a bad situation to begin with. And now it looks like it's just getting worse. We'll see. Bye, back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I tend to think Elon was trolling the whole "I'm going to buy Twitter" until he found himself locked into that rather bad contract he signed. And realized that in the middle of that court case, that if he let it continue, he would have to pay $44 billion and he wouldn't even get Twitter, because that was the penalty for reneging on it, that he pay the sum whether he buys it or not. So he decided that he had to buy it and had to figure out how he could survive it. Just a touch very lightly. He did not invent PayPal. He did not start PayPal. He started a net bank called X.com, which was a rather poor competition to another banking company on the Internet, which decided to buy up X.com shares and gave Elon enough shares to get put in charge of that company for a little while, until everyone decided he was a terrible programmer and a worse businessman, and they kicked him to the curb. But he still had the shares, and then they changed that company to name of PayPal, and the rest is history. SpaceX is basically a lot of very smart rocket scientists who follow orders, and a lot of government subsidies, billions and billions, and investment bankers, billions and billions of dollars. So he has an interesting history.
Yeah, Howard Hughes of today, and he had some failures too. He built the Spruce Goose, and well, at least it got off the, well, not the ground, off the water once, and that was it. He got one flight out of that, and we all know the story. What happened to Hughes?
Yes, that's a cautionary tale. You don't want to end your life in a hotel room in the dark wearing tissue boxes for slippers. I tend to perceive Elon a little bit less as, say, Howard Hughes, because he has no engineering expertise whatsoever. He has no degree in engineering. He has a business degree. I see him less as Howard Hughes or Thomas Edison and more as P.C. Barnum.
Okay. There's a couple of companies like that, like you were saying before, that they don't make any money. And, you know, it's all being driven by their stocks. And Uber is another one, so. Well, at least they're driving people around. That's another one I heard that they don't make 10 cents.
Yeah, it's part of the tech bubble. There's a lot of companies that start out without making any profit. They shovel all of the money, if they make any, back into the business. Amazon was a good example. If you look at the early years of Amazon, even when they had stock, they had no reportable profits because Jeff Bezos would pile the money that they made selling us all the goodies that we like to buy back into the business. So for years and years, it looked like a business a mystery. You know, how did you sell billions of dollars and have zero profit? But finally, they had enough invested in themselves where they switched gears, and now they're very profitable. You know, it's a good stock. Tesla does not give dividends. Tesla stock has never given a single dime of dividends. The point of Tesla stock, theoretically, is that the price of the stock goes up every year, except now it's gone down a great deal. And it's valued at a rather ridiculous thing. It's probably valued at something like 30 or 40% more price-earnings ratio than it should. It's basically priced with the same capital as all the other car manufacturers in the United States, and Tesla puts out about 3% of the cars in the United States. So, you know, economics is really weird.
Yeah, now he has competition. You know, I watch a lot of TV, you know, sit through hours and hours of the news. But the commercials that come on are car commercials, and they're electric, a lot of electric cars, and they're not Tesla. Come to think of it, I've never seen a Tesla commercial. Anyway, back to you, Roy. I know Wesley's waiting in the wings.
No, that's okay. Go ahead, Greg.
Okay, I think we're kind of kicking a dead horse at this point. You know, I just want to point out that he promised autopilot cars, I think, back in 2017. I think there's a 2018 video clip where he suggests that only a fool wouldn't buy a Tesla because you could turn it into an auto-driven taxi and collect $30,000 a year as a taxi. That wasn't true. It isn't true. Matter of fact, unfortunately, there's a couple of people got run over by Teslas who were not very happy about the autopilot feature. So he tends to overpromise on technology. You kind of notice it with the rockets. You notice it with the solar cells. Pretty much, you notice it with with the cars, with the trucks, with just about every piece of equipment. He talks about robots, and his robots wouldn't look good back in the 1950s. He talks about these little chip interfaces in the brain, and I think he canceled the. He was going to do a demonstration. God forbid, you know, what that was going to be like. But a lot of promises, very, very few actual things actually that you could buy that work, that don't run over people.
Okay, I didn't follow his robot story. I didn't know that. I was following the loop. I mean, he was going to put the transportation loop, you know, with a vacuum, and these things are going to fly through these tubes on a type of loop. He built a tunnel in California, and now, you know, he has a demonstration, but now that's all backfilled, and now it's a parking lot.
Yeah, it has become a disaster. The Hyperloop, you can see versions of the Hyperloop mentioned in magazines in 1930. So it's old technology to begin with, but it's not viable technology. It disrupted the entire scheme that California had planned to increase mass transit and high-speed rail, because people said, why don't we wait for the Hyperloop? They connived a bunch of people in Las Vegas to have, quote, a Hyperloop, which is actually a small tunnel in which a taxi driver drives a Tesla about 2 miles, and they can't turn around because the tunnel is too tight for that. So if something terrible happens, they have to back up. So it's a tunnel in Las Vegas. And other companies that kind of ran with the idea have gotten absolutely nowhere. It's a deeply flawed technology because it requires something that no one knows quite how to do. How do you sustain a very low vacuum consistently over miles and miles and miles of infrastructure? And the answer is, you don't.
Okay. That's why they did say it would work good on the moon or Mars. So yeah, I agree with that. You'll have to fight the air. You can put it on above ground too. It's not going to work with a strong, any kind of a strong atmosphere like we have. You know, Hyperloop, I mean, the first version of it I saw goes back to science fiction. Yeah, Forbidden Planet was in 1951, I want to guess. And they showed the Krell, I think it was the name of the civilization that built all this stuff on that planet. You know, they went and took a ride through the Hyperloop system. I don't know if you remember that, but that's as far back as I remember. You know, probably 1951.
KC2GS. Yeah, I remember that. I love Forbidden Planet. I had a high-end audio receiver that was, the company's name was Krell, so, and they named it after, obviously, the civilization on that movie. That was Robbie the Robot. I still, in my shack, have a Robbie the Robot and all kinds of fun stuff. So, yeah, it was around for decades before that, because the concept isn't too difficult. It's the actual implementation that's impossible. And there are bits and pieces of the Hyperloop just sitting there and rusting, and you can see how, unless you take care of it very, very meticulously, those things would perforate in a year or two. And with you know, miles of length of it, you know, it would be a mess to maintain. It's just awful. And there's a guy on YouTube who kind of regularly takes apart all the planes. He's kind of gone through Elon's entire Mars colonization and demonstrated how ludicrously absurd it is with the amount of stuff that you would have to bring to Mars. You could not simply just land there in low gravity and low atmosphere and do a lot of heavy industrial mining unless you bring mining equipment, which takes a lot of more rockets. So, yeah, it's weird.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. Some of the stuff from science fiction works out. But, you know, my guess is 90% of it don't. But, okay. Back to you, Rick.
Okay, I mean, my attitude is give it time. Unfortunately, I think one of the major limitations is our technology for propulsion is limiting us. Now, is there another method of propulsion that we're unaware of? Maybe. Maybe not. If there is, if we figure it out, it'll kind of change the game entirely. Because right now, the amount of massive energy required to go from one planet to another is not very cost-effective unless there's something really valuable on that other planet. And as far as I'm aware, Mars doesn't have much. They came up with a scheme, as you know, because we talked about it, of helium-3 on the moon. That might be interesting. I don't even know if that's cost-effective, but we'll see how that develops.
I'd be interested to know your opinion about a comparison you can make one, because you mentioned Thomas Edison, and we Elon Musk, so you will take three gentlemen, Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla, and Elon Musk. Well, two of those gentlemen had plenty of money, and they were driven by what? Is the point at which we could see a spoiled kid who doesn't know what to do else. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
I forget how many countless acres they would have to dig up just to get, you know, a couple of pounds of this tritium that they could eventually send back to Earth. You know, I mean, it would be great. You know, they could take the stuff and use it for nuclear power. But the effort on the moon might be cost effective.
As I remember, I think tritium wasn't rare enough to make it worth their while. They were looking for helium-3, which is much rarer on the Earth because the primary source of it is solar, and our magnetic field dissipates it. So you could only really mine deposits on bodies that don't have a significant magnetic field shielding it.
Okay, well, maybe that's what it was. Or is that derived from tritium? You know, helium-3, is that part of the tritium molecules, maybe?
No, tritium isn't the molecule. Tritium is an atom. It's an atom with one proton and two neutrons. Hydrogen just has a proton. Deuterium has one neutron, and tritium has two neutrons. It's very, very useful in your reactors to kind of chain react. So it's very valuable, very, very rare, and the way that we usually get it, as far as I'm aware, is by extracting it from seawater. The separation technology is ridiculously expensive because the amount of tritium in the sea and water is very, very low.
The same idea on Earth, then. You would like, you know, just to get an ounce of tritium, you'd probably have to process maybe an Olympic swimming pool, or maybe more, I don't know. But I don't know, they're going to have to do something eventually, because sooner or later somebody's going to be able to create a sustained nuclear fusion plant, and then they're going to need that fuel.
Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, as we've joked repeatedly, it's been 20 years in our future since 1960, and it just keeps on saying 20 years in our future. If the technology is available, then the demand will increase, and so people will need the price. You probably need something like 1,000 stadiums to get an ounce of pure tritium, ditritium hydroxide or something. That's very expensive. Physics always is a compromise. You can't kind of play games with physics. So, yeah, the big thing is getting tritium to kind of feed the reaction. You don't need a lot, but you need some.
Okay, now the question comes in with, how did the tritium get into the oceans? Is that coming from the sun? How did that magically appear, and why is there so little of it? WS1.
Yeah, it's from cosmic ray interactions, bombardments, and such. It decays over time. It doesn't have a very long half-life. So a very small amount is produced. That amount it dissipates over time. But there is a small amount that tends to combine with regular hydrogen and oxygen as tritiated water, and it's the best source that we have. If you think of it, how many places can you go find hydrogen atoms? Hydrogen atoms don't really hang out much in the atmosphere, because the atmosphere is mostly made out of 80% nitrogen, about 20% oxygen, a little bit less than a percent of argon, and some trace elements. So the biggest pool of hydrogen atoms is our ocean.
Okay, very good. And we need to keep them in good shape. The ocean, the oceans are messy.